Hi everyone, Duncan Casey of the Duncan and Duncan podcast here with Duncan Williams. We're just doing a separate little piece now because obviously everyone in Munster Rugby was struck by the very sad news at the weekend that Gareth Fitzgerald passed away. He was Duncan and I's boss for the entirety of our time at Munster Rugby, and he was acted as boss to people that are a lot older than us as well. He was there for the bones of 20 years, so obviously huge sympathies to his family. A very difficult time for any family to lose someone, particularly a guy of Gareth's stature. So to Anya, Megan, Jamie and Michael, we obviously keeping them in our thoughts and feel very sorry for them at this difficult time. Dunk, what was your relationship with Gareth like?
Yeah, obviously he was coaching Christians originally when I was, I think he left probably when I was going into second or third year, but he was a hero there because so as Christians hadn't won the Senior Cup for a couple of years and he came in and won it 4 years on the bounce, you know, coaching Dunners and those lads. I think Chuckin was, James Conlon would have been in that, around that group as well, but it was, yeah, he was kind of a cult hero after that in Christians. I remember you'd see him the odd time and he was actually quite a big, imposing man. He'd be quite intimidating, but when you actually started talking to him, you'd realise that he actually had a good personality and it was up for a bit of crack as well. Yet, as I said, quite intimidating. You wouldn't want to cross him. You hear stories about him on the training field, standing up the lads and a few choice words. So it was, I was actually a bit gutted when he left Christians because I was hoping to be coached by him. You know, everyone, after he won all those Senior Cups, everyone that was coming up in those years was dying to get coached by him because he's such a good reputation.
Yeah, I'm sure he found himself in the role of CEO in an organisation that, the type of organisation that Munster ended up becoming almost by accident. I don't think anyone could have foreseen how professional rugby was going to transform completely. He took over in 99 and obviously that was the start of what became a really successful kind of glory period for Munster rugby. And as I'm sure we'll speak to Raj about when we do speak to him, I don't think anyone could have predicted that, but he was able to take it all in his stride, the developments in the game, the difficulties, the successes, take it all in his stride. And for someone to stay in a position like that for the bones of 20 years is quite remarkable. And for someone with such a deep attachment to the province to do so as well is even more impressive. There have been some excellent tributes paid to him, obviously. The standout for me is from Philip Quinn, who both of us would know very well, financial controller still, I think, in Munster Rugby. He acted as interim CEO when Gareth fell ill initially. But he wrote a terrific piece in today's Examiner, which is worth reading if anyone hasn't read it yet. The opening paragraph kind of sums Gareth up pretty well, and the kind of high esteem that he was held in by everyone. He says, Gareth Fitzgerald was an exceptional man and somebody that we all looked up to in Munster Rugby. He was a man of honesty and integrity with a huge passion for the game. He embodied everything that is good in Munster Rugby, and for us, he was Mr. Munster Rugby. And I think that nicely sums up the kind of status he held.
And there you can see in the headline, Gareth was a people person to his core. I think maybe our kind of generation didn't really get to appreciate that. I think, as you said, he fell into the role of CEO when professional rugby was kicking off. And like, as you said, Raj and all those lads were kind of starting in the professional game as well, didn't know where it was going. They were all finding their feet together. I think maybe there was more face-to-face time there and they got to really appreciate, as I said, the personality he did have. Obviously, there wasn't agents and it wasn't as professional at the time, so maybe not as high pressured and high profile. So I think maybe we didn't, as I said, our generation didn't really get to appreciate that side of him.
Yeah, I think, well, I have it in my head that rugby back then was very much kind of people kind of going around saying, oh, should we give it a go? Sure.
Yeah, he wasn't locked in the bar after every game, like with his tie around his head or anything. Like,
but yeah, exactly. But I think it was like I was saying, it was very much an uncertain period. Nobody really knew what way it was going to go, whereas it obviously morphed very much into a business out of necessity. And even though like we all got on very well with Gareth, I think, and were able to enjoy him when we got time with him, but his role became far more of a business role probably than it was to begin with. And
as a people person as well, like, he always knew everything about everyone. I found, like, even if I met him a few times in school, as I said, in second year, like, my brother was ahead of me. He knew my brother, he knew my family, he knew where I lived, he knew where I was from, what club I played for before that. And that didn't change, I think, even till last year when I last met him, that any of the younger lads coming up, he knew exactly everything about them. And I think that was a good thing to see. And I think I'm glad that he never lost that after how many 20, 25, 30 years involved at Munster. So it's quite impressive.
Yeah, my parents knew him from their college days in UCC, and they remarked he was very much one of the cool kids. So he'd be kind of back in the day where you'd get away with going for a feed of points probably a few times a week before playing a Munster Senior League game at the weekend. But he was part of that crew that the lads were jealous of, and the women took a shine to.
Oh yeah.
And as you say, he was always a very humble guy, and always got on very well with anyone, regardless of what kind of background they came from or what their association with rugby was. He was just a universally popular guy.
I think no matter how serious he was, he could always appreciate a good gag. I remember if you were chatting and he said something, you kind of gave an old funny answer back, he'd laugh at it even though it was a serious conversation. He wasn't one to, you know, kind of give you a strange look for trying to make lighthearted stuff. So I think that was always, it was a good sign of him as well.
Yeah, he was a tough guy as well, in terms of when he needed to be tough, as his role demanded. He was...
The old phone would go missing, Dad, came in the radio, ringing him
But again, to refer back to Philip's piece in the Examiner today, the story about Donica O'Callaghan, which some people may be familiar with, but Garrett refers to when Donica went to Garrett looking for a rise when his contract was being renewed. Garrett's response to the request was, "You don't drink, you don't smoke, you live at home. What do you want more money for?" Suitably mollified, Donica went away to think about it. After consulting with his buddies, he went back to Garrett and tried again, this time saying he was thinking of buying a car. I was actually talking to another player yesterday, talking about a previous negotiation he had with Garrett, and this was a couple of years back, and he said that, you know, it was kind of getting to the business end of negotiations, and Gareth got in touch with the player and said, "You're around tomorrow. How does 9:30 suit?" And the player said, I'm away between 9 and 11:30, Gareth. Can we go after that?" Gareth said, "I'll see you at 9:30. So he was a tough taskmaster when he needed to be, but as you said, he always retained that really good connection with people at all levels of the organisation. So he'll be sadly missed.
Yeah, I remember when we were in school, so the juniors and seniors used to always play like the same teams in the same week. So like if we were going to Dublin, we'd both be playing St. Michael's or whatever it was. So we were getting the bus one day. I must have been in second year. I was playing with the juniors, so we were travelling with the seniors. And it was obviously after Christmas, and there's usually a drinking band in like for the senior lads when getting closer to the cup. So Gary, we were known for checking in on fellas. And I remember we were all sitting on the bus waiting to go, and he stood up at the front of the bus and he shouted down, "Where were you last night? I rang your house phone and your mother said there was no sign of you and she didn't know where you would be." And he said, "Where were you?" And I said, "I was at you at the cinema and I stopped in the fruit shop on the way home." And the whole bus erupted laughing. Like, but as I said, Garrett's kind of personality, he didn't bat an eyelid, laughed at it himself and sat down and could appreciate a good gag, like, to be fair to him.
So yeah, a sad period for Munster rugby, and a sad few years really, with following on from Axel passing away back in 2016. That's two very big characters in Munster rugby that have left a big legacy behind them. So once again, our thoughts to Anya, Megan, Jamie, and Michael in this difficult time. But rest in peace, Garrett. Yep. You'll be sorely missed.
Yeah, rest in peace.
We've got Raj on the line now. Raj, hope you keep him well. Obviously, a sad time for Munster rugby. It's lost a very big personality.
He would have had a much different relationship with him compared to our generation. Like, he obviously started pro rugby and he came into the CEO job as it just kicked off. You were all kind of finding your feet together compared to, you know, there was no agents or anything. You were dealing with him kind of one-on-one, as opposed to, like, we didn't really have much face time with him. Like,
yeah, well, exactly. And it was very different back then, and the fact that it was... Like, it literally was Tuesday and Thursday night when I first went into Munster. And then, that was in 97. Then it was professional in 98, with professional being a full-time contract, 7,500. Would that have been punt or euro?
Punt. Punt, yeah. Would have still been punt, all money.
And if you were on a national contract, it was... Like, the big dogs in Ireland were David Corkery, Brian O'Mara, and Dominic Crotty. They got a Mondeo and a national deal of 25,000. And it was, you know, ever since, I suppose, it was just Gareth was there, but, you know, it was very different in the fact that we were, I suppose, just Munster. was all we knew, in the fact that if you were, it was more the club game and then Munster, but it wasn't like really the option of going to England or anything like that for any of the players. It was.
Well, I remember going up to with my old fella, kind of in mid to late 90s, around that period, going up to watch European Cup games in Musgrave Park, and there literally being 250, 300 people up there watching competitive European rugby, which is probably difficult for people under a certain age to comprehend now. But was there any indication back then of what way professional rugby was going to go, Raj?
No, I remember. Sure, the reason, I suppose, it was John Bevan from Wales declined the Munster job, and that's how Declan Gidney came in. And then, sure, Gareth was a teacher, or was he in Christians? That's how he knew him, Duncan, wasn't it?
Yeah, he was still coaching when I think he left when I was going into third year, maybe, kind of around 2000. So I think he coached the senior cup team kind of 1999-2000.
And he was poached from the bank then to go into Munster.
But yeah, like as I said, I wouldn't have had much dealing with him in Christians. I would have had one or two, like, bumped into him, chatted to him a few times. But as I said, you seem to have more of an appreciation of the personality. Like, we only got glimpses of it. Like, no,
Gareth too. He never came across as. I never look upon Gareth as the CEO. He was Gareth.
Yeah.
You know, he was always there, but. It was weird because Dunica was 2 years younger than me, Dunica O'Callaghan, and Dunica and himself were nearly buddies. So, like, I was travelling to every game and every training session, Cork, Limerick, with Dunica. And Dunica used to talk like him and take him off. And it was very funny. Well, it was very funny 20 years ago. It's not very funny now.
Yeah.
With the same jokes, regurgitated, as you know. But I think the abiding memory that I think rests with me is just Gareth's passion for the game. He was very, very passionate, you know. I just win the thing first and everything else looks after itself, you know. That was always what he said, you know.
Yeah, we heard that one a few times as well, yeah.
You know, I think it's only when you kind of stand back a bit and you watch a little bit of old footage, the atmospheres in Thomond Park, you know what I mean, from probably 2000 on, there's no doubt it's the best atmosphere. Well, it probably isn't nowadays, but it was certainly around 2000.
In terms of, like, Gareth, so Gareth, you made your debut, Raj, in 97, and Gareth took over in 99, so you're both starting more or less at that time, that kind of transition into professional rugby, but still, I would say, hanging on to a lot of elements of the amateur era. What do you think the biggest challenges were for Munster and for Gareth in particular at that stage? As you said, with nobody really knowing what direction the thing was going to go, did it all look after itself? Was there a lot of groundwork that went into getting Munster to the position where they were competing for European Cups?
There was, you know, I think there's a few stages in the career of a rugby man, I suppose. You're the player where you're incredibly selfish and all you concern yourself is with you, because it's hard enough to succeed when you're in your own little boule, as they say in France. What's it? You're in your own little bubble, essentially, and all you care about is yourself, because you have to. And then, as time comes along, you kind of become more experienced and you see it kind of how would this affect the group and how would it affect the squad as you become more mature and become a senior player. And then you look upon it as a management team. But, like, there was so much work done by Gareth, by Jerry Holland, Colm Tucker, Brian O'Brien. So many, I suppose, the best of the clubmen basically put aside their differences between Shannon, the Cookies, Con, Gary Owen, everyone, for the best of Munster, and it really, really became a first, you know, super club, because at first they were saying it will never work, but it was the likes of Gareth, really, who gelled the whole thing together. And in fairness to Decky, he did it as, that was his masterpiece, getting the red jersey more powerful than the clubs, and the clubs were extremely powerful then.
Yeah, I suppose if you look at everything that Gareth achieved, when you put it down on paper, it's very difficult to envisage anyone else in a similar role having had that much success over such a prolonged period of time, two European Cups, the redevelopment of Thomond Park and Musgrave Park, which in themselves are massive projects and continue to really be worked on today, particularly with Musgrave Park, the construction of the High Performance Centre in Limerick. Stuff like having, was it 8 players selected for the Lions in 2009, Rog? I know there was a lot of bad luck. Nine players, so there's a lot of bad luck.
Incredible.
I think not everyone got to go.
It's only when you kind of stand back and take a bit of a global view, he's been there really when, well, over a long period of time. But I think the biggest compliment I could probably give him, I think, how he shaped the men. I think you'd like to think that, as you know, the people that have gone before, you always like to leave the jersey in a better place. But he shaped a lot of difficult characters into really good men, I think. And, you know, like, there was a bit of rough edges on a lot of us. But I think the great thing about Gareth was he and Munster, the values he learned was probably respect. And that stays with you. I think that was very important because, you know, meet a few wild men in our team and a few fellas who needed discipline and a few other guys who needed their confidence built up. But I think Gareth had a huge patience too, because you got to understand he was dealing with Paulie and myself a lot too. And I can tell you some of those meetings weren't passive, should we say, you know. But he always did what's best for Munster. And you know, I think I'll always remember too and be grateful that I didn't, I kind of retired as a player and I didn't go into the group as a coach. I think that was really, I always thank Gareth for that. I think it was just such a wise move out of him to keep me, to separate, because you just didn't want your memories as a player tarnished potentially by going into a staff because you're too close with the player. Now I have all those memories of playing with those boys that aren't spoiled or soured.
I always got the impression that he was like quite a tough person, but you know, if you did step out of line, that in the public eye he'd support you all the way, but behind closed doors he'd tell you what's what and drag you back in line. So that kind of goes with what you were saying there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, but I think you know, I think I read a few, there was some few great tributes to him over the last 48 hours, and I think Gareth was fair. That's all you can ask. He's got a bloody tough job. He was very, very fair. But he was also, you could see the pride in him. He dropped his guard a few times over the years. And I think that's so important too, because he has such a big title or whatever. But to me, he was just Gareth, one of the kind of founding members of the journey. That day really were kick-started in Bordeaux, that semi-final when we beat Toulouse. And, you know, I think it was just important to see what it meant to him in 06 and 08. And, I always say you got to enjoy the journey, and he was on the journey for such a long time that everyone who has worn that jersey, I think, has a really soft spot for him.
Yeah, definitely. And the fact that he was there essentially for 20 years and probably, for all intents and purposes, would still be here in the same role, had his health not taken a turn for the worse. I think it's so rare nowadays, particularly given how much money is in the world of professional sport, but now in recent years in particular, professional rugby, it's so rare to have someone in such a senior role in an organization for such a long period of time that has a real genuine connection to the place, right from school-wise rugby through club rugby to amateur provincial rugby and right into success in the professional era. How important was it to have kind of a guy with that attachment to Munster overseeing the whole thing? And
most important, you cannot underestimate what he's done, Duncan. You cannot, like, when you think of Munster, you think of Gareth, you think of how passionate he was, and that's sometimes an overused word, but he absolutely loved Munster rugby. He was doing his job. He wouldn't have looked upon it as a job, but he was also smart enough to kind of reinvent himself a few times. He knew when to kind of keep his distance. He knew when the squad needed a word and discipline. He created, I think, a group of players, well, certainly I can only speak for the squads I played in, that will be friends for the rest of their lives. That's so important, because we don't really have a game in a dressing room where we go and see each other, but and we're all spread throughout the world. But the connection I think forged among the teams that I played in is down to the values that essentially Gareth has created, because you have to get direction from the top, and he was the man who gave us the direction. And it's a bloody sad day. It's a very, very, very sad day. And it's shocking, really, because I suppose it's a little bit like Axel, where, you know, I unfortunately didn't make the funeral today. Until you actually see that a coffin, it doesn't really register with you. So it's very, very sad.
It is, absolutely. And I think the one bit of consolation for his family will be how touched I'm sure they all are with the crowds that turned out yesterday and indeed today, because I saw someone say online, the name escapes me, but he's one of the executives in the Pro 14, and he commented on how universally popular Gareth was kind of in rugby circles right around Europe. And I think that's a good summary of what his personality really was. He was just a popular guy with everyone that he dealt with and everyone that he came across with. And he certainly left
and
a lot
touched
of...
touched on their family as well, Anya. I know I met Anya over the years, his wife, and she still is an absolute monster nut. Loves it. Upside down. Yeah. You could just see them smiling on her face, and it'll always stick with me, you know. And it's, you know, they say obviously behind the great man is an even better woman. And I think she should be very, very proud today. And I think, as you said, the reaction, obviously he's been there such a long time, but it's not the amount of time you're there, it's the quality you bring when you are there. And he brought it in spades. And you know, there's a reason why Munster is known as one of the best clubs in the world, and it's down to Gareth.